The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 8.
Sam and Peregrine had not been idle. They had explored the small dell and the surrounding slopes. Not far away, they found a spring of clear water in the hillside, and near it footprints not more than a day or two old. In the dell itself, they found recent traces of a fire and other signs of a hasty camp. There were some fallen rocks on the edge of the dell nearest to the hill. Behind them, Sam came upon a small store of firewood, neatly stacked. "I wonder if old Gandalf has been here," he said to Pippin. "Whoever it was put this stuff here meant to come back, it seems." Strider was greatly interested in these discoveries.
"I wish I had waited and explored the ground down here myself," he said, hurrying off to the spring to examine the footprints. "It's just as I feared," he said when he came back. "Sam and Pippin have trampled the soft ground, and the marks are spoiled or confused. Rangers have been here lately. It is they who left the firewood behind. But there are also several newer tracks that were not made by rangers. At least one set was made only a day or two ago by heavy boots. At least one. I cannot now be certain, but I think there were many booted feet." He paused and stood in anxious thought. Each of the hobbits saw in his mind a vision of the cloaked and booted riders. If the horsemen had already found the dell, the sooner Strider led them somewhere else the better. Sam viewed the hollow with great dislike, now that he had heard news of their enemies on the road, only a few miles away.
"Hadn't we better clear out quick, Mr. Strider?" he asked impatiently. "It's getting late, and I don't like this hole. It makes my heart sink somehow."
"Yes, we certainly must decide what to do at once," answered Strider, looking up and considering the time and the weather. "Well, Sam," he said at last, "I don't like this place either, but I can't think of anywhere better that we could reach before nightfall.
At least we are out of sight for the moment, and if we moved, we should be much more likely to be seen by spies. All we could do would be to go right out of our way back north on this side of the line of hills, where the land is all much the same as it is here. The road is watched, but we should have to cross it if we tried to take cover in the thickets away to the south. On the north side of the road, beyond the hills, the country is bare and flat for miles."
"Can the riders see?" asked Mary. "I mean, they seem usually to have used their noses rather than their eyes, smelling for us, if smelling is the right word, at least in the daylight. But you made us lie down flat when you saw them down below, and now you talk of being seen if we move."
"I was too careless on the hilltop," answered Strider. "I was very anxious to find some sign of Gandalf, but it was a mistake for three of us to go up and stand there so long. For the black horses can see, and the riders can use men and other creatures as spies, as we found at Bree. They themselves do not see the world of light as we do, but our shapes cast shadows in their minds, which only the noon sun destroys, and in the dark they perceive many signs and forms that are hidden from us. Then they are most to be feared. And at all times they smell the blood of living things, desiring and hating it. Senses, too, there are other than sight or smell. We can feel their presence. It troubled our hearts. As soon as we came here, and before we saw them, they feel ours more keenly. Also," he added, and his voice sank to a whisper, "the ring draws them near."
"Is there no escape, then?" said Frodo, looking round wildly. "If I move, I shall be seen and hunted. If I stay, I shall draw them to me."
Strider laid his hand on his shoulder.
"There is still hope," he said. "You are not alone. Let us take this wood that is set ready for the fire as a sign. There is little shelter or defence here, but fire shall serve for both. Sauron can put fire to his evil uses, as he can all things, but these riders do not love it, and fear those who wield it. Fire is our friend in the wilderness."
"Maybe," muttered Sam. "It's also as good a way of saying, 'Here we are,' as I can think of, bar shouting." Down in the lowest and most sheltered corner of the dell they lit a fire and prepared a meal. The shades of evening began to fall, and it grew cold. They were suddenly aware of great hunger, for they had not eaten anything since breakfast, but they dared not make more than a frugal supper. The lands ahead were empty of all save birds and beasts, unfriendly places deserted by all the races of the world. Rangers passed at times beyond the hills, but they were few and did not stay. Other wanderers were rare and of evil sorts. Trolls might stray down at times out of the northern valleys of the misty mountains. Only on the road would travellers be found, most often dwarves, hurrying along on business of their own, and with no help and few words to spare for strangers. "I don't see how our food can be made to last," said Frodo. "We've been careful enough in the last few days, and this supper's no feast. But we've used more than we ought, if we have 2 weeks still to go, and perhaps more."
"There is food in the wild," said Strider, "berry, root, and herb, and I have some skill as a hunter at need. You need not be afraid of starving before winter comes, but gathering and catching food is long and weary work, and we need haste. So tighten your belts, and think with hope of the tables of Elrond's house." The cold increased as darkness came on. Peering out from the edge of the dell, they could see nothing but a grey land now vanishing quickly into shadow. The sky above had cleared again and was slowly filled with twinkling stars. Frodo and his companions huddled round the fire, wrapped in every garment and blanket they possessed, but Strider was content with a single cloak and sat a little apart, drawing thoughtfully at his pipe. As night fell, and the light of the fire began to shine out brightly, he began to tell them tales to keep their minds from fear. He knew many histories and legends of long ago, of elves and men and the good and evil deeds of the elder days. They wondered how old he was, and where he had learned all this lore.
"Tell us of Kil-galad," said Merry suddenly, when he paused at the end of a story of the elf kingdoms. "Do you know any more of that old lay that you spoke of?"
"I do indeed," answered Strider. "So also does Frodo, for it concerns us closely."
Merry and Pippin looked at Frodo, who was staring into the fire. "I know only the little that Gandalf has told me," said Frodo slowly. "Gil-galad was the last of the great elf kings of Middle-earth. Gil-galad is starlight in their tongue. With Elendil, the elf friend, he went to the land of—"
"No," said Strider, interrupting. "I don't think that tale should be told now with the servants of the enemy at hand. If we win through to the house of Elrond, you may hear it there, told in full."
"Then tell us some other tale of the old days," begged Sam. "A tale about the elves before the fading time. I would dearly like to hear more about elves. The dark seems to press round so close."
"I will tell you the tale of Tenuviel," said Strider. "In brief, for it's a long tale of which the end is not known, and there are none now, except Elrond, that remember it aright as it was told of old. It is a fair tale, though it's sad, as are all the tales of Middle-earth, and yet it may lift up your hearts." He was silent for some time, and then he began not to speak, but to chant softly. "The leaves were long, the grass was green, the hemlock gumbles tall and fair, and in the glade a light was seen of stars in shadow shimmering. Tenuviel was dancing there to music of a pipe unseen, and light of stars was in her hair and in her raiment glimmering. There Beren came from mountains cold, and lost he wandered under leaves, and where the elven river rolled he walked alone and sorrowing. He peered between the hemlock leaves, and saw in wonder flowers of gold upon her mantle and her sleeves, and her hair like shadow following. Enchantment healed his weary feet, that over hills were doomed to roam, and forth he hastened, strong and fleet, and grasped at moonbeams glistening.
Through woven woods in elven home she lightly fled on dancing feet, and left him lonely still to roam in the silent forests listening. He heard there oft the flying sound of feet as light as linden leaves, or music welling underground in hidden hollows quavering. Now withered lay the hemlock sheaves, and one by one with sighing sound whispering fell the beechen leaves in the wintry woodland wavering. He sought her ever, wandering far where leaves of years were thickly strewn by light of moon and ray of star in frosty heavens shivering. Her mantle glinted in the moon as on a hilltop high and far she danced, and at her feet was strewn a mist of silver quivering. When winter passed, she came again, and her song released the sudden spring like rising lark and falling rain and melting water bubbling. He saw the elven flowers spring about her feet, and healed again he longed by her to dance and sing upon the grass untroubling. Again she fled, but swift he came. Tinuviel, Tinuviel, he called her by her elvish name, and there she halted listening. One moment stood she, and a spell his voice laid on her. Baron came, and doom fell on Tinuviel, that in his arms lay glistening. As Baron looked into her eyes, within the shadows of her hair, the trembling starlight of the skies, he saw their mirrored shimmering. Tinuviel, the elven fair, immortal maiden elven wise, about him cast her shadowy hair and arms like silver glimmering. Long was the way that fate them bore, o'er stony mountains cold and grey, through halls of iron and darkling door, and woods of nightshade morrowless. The sundering seas between them lay, and yet at last they met once more, and long ago they passed away in the forest, singing sorrowless. Strider sighed and paused before he spoke again. "That is a song," he said, "in the mode that is called Anthenath among the elves, but is hard to render in our common speech, and this is but a rough echo of it. It tells of the meeting of Beren, son of Barahir, and Luthien Tinuviel. Beren was a mortal man, but Luthien was the daughter of Thingol, a king of elves upon Middle-earth when the world was young, and she was the fairest maiden that has ever been among all the children of this world. As the stars above the mists of the northern lands was her loveliness, and in her face was a shining light. In those days the great enemy, of whom Sauron of Mordor was but a servant, dwelt in Angband in the north, and the elves of the west, coming back to Middle-earth, made war upon him to regain the Silmarils, which he had stolen, and the fathers of men aided the elves. But the enemy was victorious, and Barahir was slain, and Beren, escaping through great peril, came over the mountains of terror into the hidden kingdom of Thingol, in the forest of Neldoreth. There he beheld Lúthien singing and dancing in a glade beside the enchanted river Esgaldwin. And he named her Tinuviel, that is Nightingale in the language of old. Many sorrows befell them afterwards, and they were parted long. Tinuviel rescued Beren from the dungeons of Sauron, and together they passed through great dangers, and cast down even the great enemy from his throne, and took from his iron crown one of the three Silmarils, brightest of all jewels, to be the bride price of Luthien to Thingol, her father. Yet at the last Beren was slain by the wolf that came from the gates of Angband, and he died in the arms of Tinuviel. But she chose mortality, and to die from the world, so that she might follow him. And it is sung that they met again beyond the sundering seas, and after a brief time walking alive once more in the green woods, together they passed, long ago, beyond the confines of this world. So it is that Luthien Tinuviel, alone of the elf kindred, has died indeed and left the world, and they have lost her whom they most loved. But from her the lineage of the elf lords of old descended among men. There live still those of whom Luthien was the foremother, and it is said that her line shall never fail. Elrond of Rivendell is of that kin, for of Beren and Luthien was born Dioth Ingold's heir, and of him Elwing the White, whom Erendil wedded, he that sailed his ship out of the mists of the world into the seas of heaven with a Silmaril upon his brow. And of Erendil came the kings of Numenor, that is Westerness. As Strider was speaking, they watched his strange, eager face, dimly lit in the red glow of the wood fire. His eyes shone, and his voice was rich and deep. Above him was a black, starry sky. Suddenly a pale light appeared over the crown of Weathertop behind him. The waxing moon was climbing slowly above the hill that overshadowed them, and the stars above the hilltop faded. The story ended. The hobbits moved and stretched. "Look," said Merry, "the moon is rising. It must be getting late." The others looked up. Even as they did so, they saw on the top of the hill something small and dark against the glimmer of the moonrise. It was perhaps only a large stone or jutting rock shown up by the pale light. Sam and Merry got up and walked away from the fire. Frodo and Pippin remained seated in silence. Strider was watching the moonlight on the hill intently. All seemed quiet and still, but Frodo felt a cold dread creeping over his heart, now that Strider was no longer speaking. He huddled closer to the fire. At that moment Sam came running back from the edge of the dell. "I don't know what it is," he said, "but I suddenly felt afraid. I durstn't go outside this dell for any money. I felt that something was creeping up the slope." "Did you see anything?" asked Frodo, springing to his feet. "No, sir, I saw nothing, but I didn't stop to look." "I saw something," said Merry, "or I thought I did, away westwards, where the moonlight was falling on the flats, beyond the shadow of the hilltops. I thought there were two or three black shapes. They seemed to be moving this way."
"Keep close to the fire, with your faces outward," cried Strider. "Get some of the longer sticks ready in your hands."
For a breathless time they sat there, silent and alert, with their backs turned to the wood fire, each gazing into the shadows that encircled them. Nothing happened. There was no sound or movement in the night. Frodo stirred, feeling that he must break the silence. He longed to shout out aloud. "Hush!" whispered Strider.
"What's that?"
gasped Pippin at the same moment. Over the lip of the little dell, on the side away from the hill, they felt, rather than saw, a shadow rise. One shadow, or more than one. They strained their eyes, and the shadows seemed to grow. Soon there could be no doubt. Three or four tall black figures were standing there on the slope, looking down on them. So black were they that they seemed like black holes in the deep shade behind them. Frodo thought that he heard a faint hiss as a venomous breath, and felt a thin, piercing chill. Then the shape slowly advanced. Terror overcame Pippin and Merry, and they threw themselves flat on the ground. Sam shrank to Frodo's side. Frodo was hardly less terrified than his companions. He was quaking, as if he was bitter cold, but his terror was swallowed up in a sudden temptation to put on the ring. The desire to do this laid hold of him, and he could think of nothing else. He did not forget the barrow, nor the message of Gandalf, but something seemed to be compelling him to disregard all warnings, and he longed to yield. Not with a hope of escape, or of doing anything, either good or bad, he simply felt that he must take the ring and put it on his finger. He could not speak. He felt Sam looking at him, as if he knew that his master was in some great trouble, but he could not turn towards him. He shut his eyes and struggled for a while, but resistance became unbearable, and at last he slowly drew out the chain and slipped the ring on the forefinger of his left hand. Immediately, though everything else remained as before, dim and dark, the shapes became terribly clear. He was able to see beneath their black wrappings. There were five tall figures, two standing on the lip of the dell, three advancing. In their white faces burned keen and merciless eyes. Under their mantles were long grey robes. Upon their grey hairs were helms of silver. In their haggard hands were swords of steel. Their eyes fell on him and pierced him as they rushed towards him. Desperate, he drew his own sword, and it seemed to him that it flickered red, as if it was a firebrand. Two of the figures halted. The third was taller than the others. His hair was long and gleaming, and on his helm was a crown. In one hand he held a long sword, and in the other a knife. Both the knife and the hand that held it glowed with a pale light. He sprang forward and bore down on Frodo. At that moment, Frodo threw himself forward on the ground, and he heard himself crying aloud, "O Elbereth, Gilfoniel!" At the same time he struck at the feet of his enemy. A shrill cry rang out in the night.